Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every morning from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing very well. Very well, I guess.
Big guest today, Tom Colicchio from Top Chef will be on the show in a segment or two.
Oh, I'm way bigger than he is.
It's, yeah, just in girth. That wasn't what I was talking about.
Stature doesn't count, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to let everybody know that the weekend of Thanksgiving, we're doing a great Thanksgiving dinner at both Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left, of course, as we always do. But we like to do this thing on the weekend after Thanksgiving, which is you've had enough of the family, time to get away. And so we're doing a wine dinner with wines all 10 years or older at Stage Left on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. And we're having a wine tasting at Catherine Lombardi. If you want to find out more about that, you can call us at 732-828-4444 or go to our website, stageleft.com or catherinelombardi.com. That's it for the plugs.
So I got to tell you,
yeah.
You asked me just a moment ago how I was. I'm actually a little tired this morning.
Yeah, you walked in the studio a minute ago. What's up with that? I was a little nervous. I thought it was going to be the Restaurant Guy radio show today.
I'm a little tired. My phone rang at about 3:40 a.m. this morning.
The alarm go off?
No, the alarm didn't. No alarms at the restaurant today.
Who called you?
I got to say, I've been in this business a long time. First time ever this has happened to
me. I'm all a titter. Tell me.
One of my employees' moms called me this morning at 3:40 a.m.
Whose mom called you?
Hello, is this Mark Pascal? Yes. My son Josh isn't home yet, and he was supposed to meet his brother at 1:30 in the morning. And
ma'am, I am not the principal. and I got news for you, ma'am. Your son is drunk somewhere.
Well, she was worried.
He's in the restaurant business.
She was reasonably worried because he was supposed to meet his brother somewhere.
But
apparently, she
doesn't realize that he's taking a job in the restaurant business, so he was drunk somewhere.
There is definitely a counterculture.
Ma'am, he's rolling a quarter off his nose on someone's kitchen table at this moment, and you've just woken me up.
It's 3:40 in the morning, and she's worried. I mean, she's clearly worried.
Oh, he should be worried because I'm going to mock him when I get to work today. Your mommy called the boss at home with his kids asleep?
At 3:40 in the morning,
oh,
and I'm telling
man.
You. So then I did let me call the maitre d'. Call the maitre d'. Hello, Ed. Yeah, and Ed answered one. Hello, what? Because you know the people who are in the higher ups in the restaurant, we get there early in the morning and we lead a more normal life.
Right.
Still not a normal.
We're
life.
Older. We can't take it.
We're older. We can't take it as much. So, do you have the phone number of the guys who closed last night at the restaurant? Yeah, he gives me the Kristen's phone number. I call Kristen. And I call Chris, and I'm like, you know, I'm talking quietly because it's 3:40 in the morning, and my house is asleep, and I figure Kristen's house is asleep. And I call Kristen, and ring, hello? Hello, Kristen? Yeah? Hi.
Do you know where Josh is?
She's like, yeah, he's sitting right here.
Rolling a quarter off his nose. Could you have him call his mom and report to my office?
That is exactly what I did. I said, tell him to call his mom.
Yeah,
you know what the good news is, though? So at 3:48, my phone rings again.
Yeah? Who is
it? Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
It's Josh's mom again.
What?
We found him.
Yeah. I would like to see Josh, you're listening.
I'm
sorry.
I know that his mom was terribly, terribly worried about him, and I have no problem with her calling me in order for me to track him down.
But I will mock him on the radio.
But I will mock him for it.
I want to see you both in my office.
No doubt about it.
For your next shift. Okay. I had another interesting... this you know about. I can't spring anything on you on the radio.
Right.
But I had an interesting experience. We gave someone a job. We normally, Stage Left is not a good first job to have.
No, it's not.
Because we're really mean. But this
it's not so much that we're mean. It's that we have very high expectations, and you need to be ready to work, not necessarily at a high level, but at an intense level, mm-hmm. very quickly.
And you know, it's not a good first job. But occasionally, once in a blue moon, mm-hmm. someone will come in.
I think it's less than once in a blue moon. Blue moon happens every year.
Yes, that's true. So once in a great while, we'll give someone a chance as an entry level, like as a busboy, someone mm-hmm. who's 19 years old or 18 years old, maybe if they present really well and they've done a lot of stuff, may not be jobs, but it may be other things that will give them a start. And this young man came in and he shall remain nameless, and he came in and he presented very well. 4 interviews in a trail, mm-hmm. okay, later. We have grilled this kid, tried to scare him away. He gives a lot of the right answers, you know. And he did okay in the trail, is where you come to the restaurant and you follow someone around. Anyway, we gave him a job. First day, he's fine. Second day, he's an hour and a half late.
Okay, first day he wasn't actually fine. Mm-hmm. He was so nervous that he was sweating just like he was 750 pounds.
Not nearly nervous enough, evidently, because second day, kid's an hour and a half late. And we're like, listen, dude, this does not fly. I don't care why.
Right.
I don't want to know why, but you were an hour and a half late to work. I can't. That
right,
can't
we're
be.
Counting on you.
And, you know, like we talked to him a lot, and the penalty for being late is you do some awful side work. And so he did the awful side work. And the next day, he shows up like 6 or 7 minutes late. And so he comes down to my office, I bring him down to my office, and I'm like, listen, man, I can't imagine how you could be late after the conversation mm-hmm. we had yesterday. And the kid says...
This is the discussion you're having with him right now is actually the third time he's late.
Right.
He was late a brief time, then he was late an hour and a half, now he's late 6 minutes, and this is his fourth shift.
And so, you know, it's over, right? And so I said, I can't imagine that, you know, you could be late after that conversation that we had. He said... Dude, I was just outside. I got a phone call. I had to take it. That's it. I hope it was that other job you applied for, because this one's over. And you know what's funny? And this is a generational shift. Mm-hmm. It really is a generational shift. We meet a lot of young college students, and kids in college today, college freshmen
you
especially.
You just said kids today. You put in college and parenthetically in the middle there, but you definitely said kids today.
But I mean it. I mean, there is generally a shift. A lot of 19 and 20-year-olds or 18 and 19-year-olds come to college a lot more coddled, thinking the world owes them more than when we were mm-hmm. 20 years old. I mean, if I showed up late 2 days in, not that it never happened, but if I showed up at late to my job 2 days in a row, I might not go back because I would just assume that I was fired. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just, it's a very, very different aesthetic. It's a very different mindset. And
right.
I don't like it.
This isn't first period of high school where you're 6 minutes late
right.
and you go report to the principal
right.
and you get a pass and he says don't come.
But what I will say is that we have some exceptional people that work for us, and
absolutely.
it makes the people who do stand out all the more exceptional.
Well, that's one of the things that I was going to get to, and we don't have a lot of time left, but what has happened in our restaurant, at least, and I think in great restaurants and great places to work, what happens is your staff will weed out the people who can't make it. That before I ever get a chance to get rid of somebody, 6 people will come to me and say,
that guy's
okay,
got to go.
This guy's either he's got to go or he's got to quit, one or the other.
All right, coming up, we're going to be talking more about hospitality later in the show. Tom Colicchio from Top Chef will join us. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. This is Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. You know, I didn't want to sound ungrateful. We were mocking a couple of employees before, but it's all in good fun. Because they're us. I remember us.
And especially, you know, the first guy I talked about, Josh, is fairly new with the organization, but doing very, very well. But he's still going to get mocked.
Good. Oh yeah. Your mom can't call me. I want to talk about something outside our business. I want to talk about somebody else in the industry. David Burke. Mm-hmm. Has lost his mind. I like David. I've met David. I've had some wonderful meals cooked by David. He went on the flavor spray thing, which is this spray-on flavor,
right. mm-hmm.
and they're all disgusting. And their taste revoltingly gross. It's like it's a spray-on flavor. We made fun of it before. We'll make fun of it again. But no time for that today because we have to make fun of his latest restaurant.
Make fun of his new project.
The Hawaiian Tropic Zone.
And you've heard us talk about Hawaiian Tropic Zone once or twice already before. But you know us. Once we get we're like pit bulls. Once we get our teeth into something,
and again, you've heard us speak well of David Burke before, and we have, and he's cooked us some great meals, but. The Hawaiian Tropic Zone gets 1 star from Randall Lane at Time Out New York. That's one out of six.
That's what I was just about to say. 1 out of 6. That's not 1 out of 4 New York Times. That's not 1 out of 3 Michelin. That's 1 out of 6.
Kind of smart. Here, let me read to you a little from the review. The way the Hawaiian Tropic Zone works, when movie stars need a little extra cash, they make commercials in foreign markets, and no one home is the wiser. Celebrity chefs apply the same principle to consulting, but David Burke, the acclaimed maverick who cooked under Charlie Palmer at the River Cafe and then made it big at David Burke and Donatella, committed one fatal gaffe with his latest client. He let the body Hawaiian Tropic Zone paste his glossy picture next to the menu it displays on Times Square. Hawaiian Tropic Zone is where you're served.
And Hawaiian Tropic Zone's been in the New York Times almost every single day.
And with ads. Where you're served by waitresses in bikinis. Go-go bar. Right? Okay. Somewhere between Hooters and a strip joint is what Time Out calls it. The Hawaiian-inspired surf and turf menu. They'll answer all your questions about the Hawaiian-inspired surf and turf menu in bikinis when they aren't competing in beauty pageants, promenading across an elevated glass catwalk numbered like cattle for the top waitress contest that you all vote on. And then the winner waitress, and they show a picture here of a barefoot woman in a bikini. Hot. She's hot. And she gets $100 at the end of the night.
Is there some kind of health law that you can't wait on tables barefoot? I guess not.
I don't know. I don't know. There's a line between a go-go bar and a restaurant. And I'll tell you my problem with this. Here's my problem.
Is we've crossed over that line?
Look, I don't know. No. I go to go-go bars. I haven't been to one in years, but I would. I do. I have. I've been out to a go-go bar. I don't have a problem with it. But we have young women who are professionals in our business. And David Burke says he's a professional chef. He aspires to be a professional chef. You know, and this, he aspires to have professional food. He, by putting his name on it, he's saying, this is serious. This is what food is all about. Mm-hmm. And these are the waitresses. And these are the servers. And these are the maybe the captains. You know, I don't... There are young women who work in our establishment who walk up to a table and need respect from people and deserve respect
right.
from people.
We've talked about how...
This is not serious dining, is what I'm
Well, and how some of our maitre d's are female, and how 15 years ago, it was more difficult for someone, for a female to become a maitre d' of a fine dining restaurant because the diners themselves would take that person less seriously, take their recommendations less seriously.
And here we're going.
And that's 15 years ago is not that long a time, but things really have changed in the other direction.
All right, let's get less serious for a moment. Okay. $11 million into the concept, and here's the criticism of the food. The execution of the dishes by head chef Joel Rice tasted like they came from a war zone, not a tropic zone. The signature item, an enormous $35 reinterpretation of the Asian poo-poo platter, featured overcooked filet mignon, dry chicken breast, Slim Jim-like chorizo, and doughy fantail shrimp that tasted like Mrs. Paul's.
Overcooked, dried, Slim Jim-like, all things that I do not want in my restaurant review.
Yeah.
Or my restaurant, for that matter. There you go.
And here we end. Ultimately, at a human zoo like this, the quality of the food just doesn't matter. Another tropic zone, however, is already planned to open next year inside the new Planet Hollywood in Las Vegas. And Maxim magazine recently announced plans for its own steakhouse in New York. And Randall Lane from Time Out New York asks rhetorically, I think, what's next? Daniel Boulud paying homage to topless Saint-Tropez? That I'll go for.
It's got a better shot, you think?
And he ends his terrible review with, the mind reels, the palate just gives up. And
I'm sorry, human zoo would be the worst line.
They got a picture here of a bunch of balding middle-aged men, and I'm speaking as a balding middle-aged man, at a bar, looking at a girl in a bikini
judging,
by a catwalk,
judging the contestants and or waitresses, servers.
There's a line between a serious restaurant and a go-go bar, and this is a go-go bar. And I don't have a problem with go-go bars, but there is a line between. I don't own go-go bars, so there's a line between what I do and go-go bars.
Do you think what David Burke is saying is that go-go bars should have good food?
I don't know the Go-Go Bar should have good food, and I'm not saying I'm not making a reservation for Thursday night, because I am, but I have a problem with it. And there we'll leave it with my own hypocrisy. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Today we are proud to present Jackie Naylor.
Once upon a time, New Year's Eve was a night for swank jazz, champagne, and caviar. Ring in 2007 at just such a gathering with us. The Restaurant Guys present a New Year's Eve jazz concert at the Crossroads Theater starring Ms. Jackie Naylor. Jackie's been called the new voice of jazz by Vogue magazine. Jazz Times says, in the never-ending Next Big Thing sweepstakes, bet on Jackie Naylor. She's headlined internationally, she's played with Michael McDonald and David Sanborn, and on New Year's Eve, she'll play to a sold-out crowd at the Crossroads Theater right next to our restaurants. Dine before or after the show at either one of our acclaimed restaurants. There are hotel accommodations within walking distance, one of the best jazz singers in the country, two of the best restaurants in the state, an evening not to be forgotten. Go to stageleft.com or Catherine Lombardi.com for details, reservations, and menus, or call 732-828-4444. Put the swank back in New Year's Eve. Spend it with the Restaurant Guys.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. We're just making fun of things on this show. That's all. We haven't, you know, and we may, you know, I don't know, Calicchio was supposed to join us.
Employees, employers, we're wasting no time making fun of people.
Calicchio, I want to start a new chain of restaurants, and it's going to feature Mark Pascal and Espedo.
And no one's coming.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You've just invented the restaurant that no one will arrive. The best food in the whole world, but no one's coming.
Today's review in the New York Times is of the Lonesome Dove, which is a transplant that we had heard quite a bit about. We got a number of press releases actually inviting us to go and check it out. Glad we didn't go. Because it got the no-star review by Frank Bruni.
Yeah, the
Bruni
dreaded
the
satisfactory.
Times
better than the dreaded poor,
yeah,
but still the dreaded satisfactory.
Nary a star in sight. It's dark out there. There's no stars.
You know, we had Antoinette Bruno on just recently, and Antoinette was saying how you know, there's no place for
Antoinette Bruno's from starchefs.com.
I'm sorry, not no place, but that you shouldn't go to a restaurant in its first year, and you shouldn't to review it to give it a bad review, to really pan it, that wasn't fair to the restaurant. And to some degree, I agree that it's difficult to pan a restaurant in the first year. But at the same time, people want to know. People want to know about that restaurant that is charging the same prices they're going to be charging a year from now. And
yeah, but you just simply can't expect a restaurant in the first month of operation to be where it, if it's a brand new restaurant, especially if it's not a chain, to be where it's going to be 6 months in. You have a right to expect the restaurant 6 months. You go to the restaurant on the first night, what you get is to say you were the first one there. It's not going to be perfect. It's simply not going to be perfect.
That's true.
You know what I remember about stars is New York Times is based on 4 stars. And I remember Ruth Reichel, who's been a guest on our show a couple times, and she's a great lady, and she's a great author, and she was a great critic for the Times. She sort of rebelled against the star system. She came in from California, and she sort of was a little uncomfortable with the star system. And I remember a review she wrote of a little innocent French bistro on the corner of 10th and 7th in New York City, and it was called Dix et Sept. Get it? 10th and 7th. And she gave it 1 star. She wrote these glowing prose and then gave it 1 star.
It was a really nice review.
And then at the end she said, you may ask why I would give a restaurant like this 1 star. And it was something like, I'm paraphrasing here, because a restaurant like this wouldn't want more than 1 star. Guess what? They would have loved
that
3 stars.
I would have loved 2 or 3 stars.
And they went out of business
out
6 months later, but they would have loved 3 stars, as would anyone. Anyway, when we come back, we may or may not be talking with Tom Calicchio from Top Chef, but we've got lots of stuff, great stuff on the other side of the wonderful news, which is coming up next. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Tom Colicchio. He is the owner of Craft, Craft Steak, Craft Bar, Witchcraft, and the whole Craft Empire. He's the recipient of 5 James Beard Awards. His cookbooks are Think Like a Chef and Craft Cooking, and he is the head chef and judge on the first and second season of Bravo's reality cooking show Top Chef.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
Doing well. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
When last we spoke, it was the day you were opening Craft Steak in New York City. Things going a little smoother for you these days?
A little smoother, yeah. like most restaurant openings, you know, they're rife with sort of trials and tribulations, but we kind of have things under track now, so things are going well.
Well, we like to call you at the most inconvenient time because we're like maitre d's. You know, when your mouth is full and you're chewing, that's when we come over and ask how everything's going. So we do the same thing for you.
Hey.
Call you on the day you're opening a restaurant. All right, now, we want to talk about Top Chef. We've been watching very closely this series. It is our favorite TV reality show, and frankly, it's the only TV reality show we like. We're not crazy about the other ones. So that's why we keep asking you to come back on the show. What I want to ask, though, is you've had a change. This is the first time you've really been on television in such a big way, and while everybody's known you in the industry for years, what's it like being a TV star now?
I didn't really think much of it. And first when I did, I didn't think, wow, this is going to be great. I'll be, recognized in TV. I got to say, it's a little funny.
It must be.
I guess I wasn't ready for it, and it's a little funny, but it's great. It's great to see how many people watch the show and are fans. It's pretty cool, I guess.
You know, it's funny. I was in our bar last night, and I said that you were going to be on the show with us today, and you know, I got points for having you on the show, so thanks for that. It's derivative. It works that way. Now, I want to ask about the show this year. It's great. It's riveting. The personalities are terrific.
Let's just tell anybody in our audience who doesn't know exactly how Top Chef works. It's a competition between people in the industry, or among people in the industry, and you do first a quick fire challenge, which is a half an hour challenge, where someone can get immunity, much like, I guess, the Survivor plot there, and then you do an elimination challenge where the worst person gets eliminated.
And then someone gets to be Top Chef and wins a whole lot of money and a feature editor and food and wine, a feature article in Food and Wine magazine and a whole bunch of cool stuff. And
they get to wear the crown for a year until somebody else comes in, and then we forget about the first one.
Yeah, well, hopefully they've opened a restaurant by then and have their own show, like Harold.
Harold from the first season, he's still working on getting his restaurant open. He's still looking for spaces But I'm sure within the next sort of 6 months or so, he'll have something nailed down.
Well, I got to tell you, Harold was on the very first show that you did this season.
The second season.
So,
right.
So the second season. You had the winner of last season as one of your guest judges on the first show this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Harold looked more comfortable as a being judged than judging.
I think so.
He looked a little squirm, like he was squirming a little bit in his chair.
Well, you know, the truth be told, it was about 120, 130 degrees in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
We shot in Los Angeles in the middle of a heat wave. We were downtown L.A., and they had a makeshift air conditioning system set up in the kitchen. And we had to cut the air conditioning off whenever we were shooting because it was too loud. It was ridiculously hot. It was just unbelievable.
And by the way, if any of you know chefs who work in kitchens, when a chef tells you it's hot, it's hot.
It was brutal. I mean, there was just sweat pouring off. I don't know how they shot it, but you know, it was. He was a little uncomfortable. But I think also, it's tough to critique people. I'm still not comfortable doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, I guess we're as a chef, in a way, you critique the cooks that work for you.
But you that's a different scenario. You do that one on one.
That's right, and also I try to do that sort of in for something. But we're constantly getting it's called feedback.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I look at it. It's either positive or negative, but it's feedback, and you need to let the cooks know what exactly you're looking for. So that's kind of how I put myself in that position. I try to sort of get in the mindset where these guys are working for me, and I'm just trying to give them, criticism that can help them somewhere down the road.
Right. It's different when you're judging a contest.
Right.
Now, let me ask you a question. The thing that sort of struck us about this second season is you've had some real issues, and one of the things we always say about, you know, being a chef and the title of chef is it's not just someone who can cook, it's a leader of people. It's someone who can cause other people to help them actualize their vision. In this show, we've had a couple of instances of teamwork and working with people not working out so well together and questioning of integrity in the show. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, you kind of get annoyed after a while because I think you'll probably see tonight that at the judges' table, I'm somewhat annoyed because, you know, we put them through team challenges for a reason. I think that during the team challenges, you get a chance to see leadership qualities. You get a chance to see, you know, how they are as, you know, working together as people, working with other chefs. And it sort of means a lot. This season, for some reason, anytime we get a team challenge, no one would go into the leadership position at all. They all would say, no, don't want to do it. And then, we just shot the finale. And I can't talk too much about it, but, you know, there was a lot of controversy during the finale as well because they just thought that we didn't take that kind of stuff into consideration.
You know,
and we couldn't. We basically laid it to begin saying, you left us no option here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we couldn't take this into consideration. If every time there was a team staff, no one wanted to step up.
But I mean, one of the things that I like about Top Chef is that there are more analogies that you can draw with real life in the chef world. And we've had work for us or hire us as a consultant. Guys who were amazing cooks, who could cook amazing stuff themselves in the kitchen, but they couldn't get anybody else to do it. And
that's right.
Isn't that the most important thing about being a chef as opposed to a cook?
Yeah, it is. Because you can't, I mean, you know, most people out there think that, you know, the chef's in the kitchen, you know, maybe with one other person cooking everything. And, you know, it's not the case. In my kitchen, you know, at night there's probably somewhere between 14 to 20 cooks, depending on which restaurant, you know, cooking. And so, yeah, you have to get everybody to completely sort of understand what your vision is. You need to train them to cook the way you want them to cook. And it has to happen all night long. And it is a difficult thing to do, which probably is the most important thing. You know, I always think that one of the biggest issues with chefs, especially like a young cook who becomes a chef, is that their egos grow.
Right.
So outside egos. And I always say, you know, if you ever want to run more than one operation or you want to run a large operation, you need to check your ego at the door.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
If you think you're the only one who can do that, you're never going to get anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I find that...
So, yeah, I agree.
I mean, I find that... And again, I like the way that this reflects back on... and I just watched the last episode last night. I T-voted it and watched it last night before interview today. I am always amazed in this business that people whose egos grow... But they don't do it in such a way that they can build a team around them. And very often, a guy who's a good first cook is not a good first chef. Is not a good chef because he can't be self motivated. That's what a lot
their
of
their egos grow
are.
Bigger than their bodies.
Yeah,
is what
they
is what can happen.
Yeah. Well, they grow bigger than the kitchen sometimes if they're in.
Exactly. We're talking with Tom Colicchio. He is the head judge and chef on Top Chef, the Bravo TV reality series, which you can find out more about by signing on to our website, restaurantguysradio.com. You can watch it tonight. We'll be talking more with him in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Economy Paver and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paver and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's been approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Tom Colicchio. head chef and judge of the Bravo TV reality series Top Chef, which you can watch tonight and even catch the reruns on Bravo. You can find out more about where you can catch it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com.
So, Tom, my next question about the show is, does what you did in prior shows, does that carry over, or prior episodes, does that carry over to the next episode? For instance, if someone's very good in the first four or five episodes, then just does a clunker in episode five, do they have extra weight, extra chance to stay on the show?
That is an excellent question, and the answer is no. It's a fresh slate every week, so... If you win four challenges in a row, and a fifth challenge, if you mess up, you're gone.
It seemed like Sam was about to go in that last show. He was really, at least walking on that fine line, and then you guys had that whole blow up with whether or not one of the other characters cheated, and so you said nobody's going home tonight.
I'm trying to think who. Yeah, it could have been him. It could have been Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Mia. I mean, there were a few people who could have gone that episode. But no, you know, and that's one of the hardest things for the chefs to accept.
Mm-hmm.
You're only as good as your last dish.
Exactly. And you know, it's impossible to really carry over like that. You have every week. And if miss a week, you can easily go. Yeah. Last season, Howell almost left.
Right.
There was one day where he just had a lousy time. The street challenge.
Mm-hmm.
They did the tuna, and Hickman was disappeared, and it was either he was going or Lisa, and I think Howell actually was definitely more in a leadership role in that challenge. So, you couldn't really fault him for stepping up, but in the end, the last person I saw the Hickman with was Lisa, so that's why we decided she had to go. He came very close.
Let me ask, I think one of the things that was very interesting is that when shooting this in L.A., you took them outside the box, and here you took people who didn't have a lot of experience, most of whom didn't have any experience with Asian cuisine, and you split them into teams, and you had one team go and cook something with Korean ingredients, and the other team cook something with Vietnamese ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
What do we learn from taking somebody out into a cuisine they know nothing about and saying, okay, cook Vietnamese food, though you've never done it before?
That they can't.
You know what really struck me as a huge mistake there was somebody was who was the judge there that you brought in to was
that Ming-Sai.
Ming-Sai,
he's
right.
He's Korean.
Ming is Chinese,
right? But he's an expert in Eastern cuisine. And people would present himself and they say, "Oh, it's very traditional," and he'd say, "No, it's not."
because they would contradict themselves. I mean, they would sit there and say, what is the one pastry chef? She made a panna cotta.
Oh, panna cotta, right.
With traditional flavors. traditional flavors.
Right.
And there's nothing traditional about this.
Right, and what's traditional about the Vietnamese panna cotta?
Exactly. The Vietnamese panna. And there was something else that they said was traditional. And there was something that they put in, as an ingredient. He said, what? It's not traditional. No, I think they kind of get ahead of themselves and get caught up in it, and they say things maybe they shouldn't. But in that case, I don't think they should have tried to cook anything very traditional. I think they should have sort of done a American version of what Vietnamese food could be. I mean, Vietnamese food is so influenced by the French anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That
right, they could have stayed within their skill set and still met the challenge.
Yeah. If it were derivative of, I think it would be much better than going out and saying, we're trying to do, the Korean team, they tried to do kimchi. Kimchi takes, weeks to ferment that cabbage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you liked that. You said good things about that.
I was being nice, is what you're about to say.
No, you know why? Because even though they did kimchi, see, I think if they had just sold it differently and said, we're doing a fresh kimchi or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it because the flavors are good, but it wasn't kimchi.
Do you know what's funny? Although I think it does speak to a different skill set, I think that, and you're a restaurateur as well as a chef, and I find that very often we'll have things come out from the kitchen and they'll be worded one way. And I mean, my job is to put it on the menu and make the words look right and sell it properly. So do you think that that's really a fair skill to ask a chef to have, to be able to present what it is that they did?
I think so, yeah. I think, you know, a chef should be able to do that. They should be able to understand what they're selling and how they're selling it. I always love, when I worked with Quilted Giraffe under Barry Wine, first time I saw white truffles come into a restaurant, and he got up and had the waiter get up and say, okay, this was the special tonight, what are we selling? And so we have the, you know, ricotta ravioli with white truffle, and he slammed the table and said, he said, we're charging $120 for this. No one's buying the ravioli, they're buying the white truffle. They're white truffle with ravioli today. It kind of really hit home. And, you know, there is a way to sell food. And I was young, I was like 22, 23. And, it was a lesson, you know, that I took with me the rest of my cooking career. So yeah, I think for sure they should think about what they're selling and how they're selling it. I think it's all part of being a chef. I mean, you know, it's fortunate if a chef has a partner running in front of the house who has a second set of eyes and can sort of help with that, knowing how people react to food. I think, you know, it's a definite plus for the restaurant. The chef should at least have an understanding of that.
When we come back, we're going to talk for just another couple of moments with Tom Colicchio, head chef and judge of Top Chef, the Bravo TV reality series. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Café Lombardi Restaurants. We're talking today with Tom Colicchio, head chef and judge of Top Chef, the Bravo TV reality series about food and kitchens. You know, Tom, I have to say, every season so far, there's been one guy that I thought, not only would I fire him, I'd punch him. And
we're talking about
Mike. He would be fired upon walking into the door. He was actually drunk while being judged at one point.
You know, when they cast this thing, they go out there and they cast this thing, and sometimes they make mistakes. And the bad thing is, he hangs around for a while.
I can't imagine why he wasn't let go the first time. I mean, he was plowed, and everybody who comes on says, "Yeah, Michael, it seems like you don't care." And he's like, "I'm just being me, man."
Yeah, no.
Is there a fist fight brewing?
What's that?
Is there a fist fight brewing between the two of you?
No.
Did you see where he said when he was drunk in the kitchen, where he was talking? I don't know if you guys review the film before the show is over, but he said something like, "Yeah, I'm going to take that Colicchio guy on."
We're going to duke it out.
We don't see. I see the episodes a couple of weeks early.
Uh-huh.
I think right now I'm on episode 8 at home.
Because uh-huh.
I write a blog that's on BravoTV.com
uh-huh.
That kind of gives a little, you know, running commentary about each episode. And, he was just kind of blown off steam back there because I think he was a little hurt by some of the things that I said. But, he's the kind of guy who would really benefit from working under a talented chef, because he seems to, you know, it's funny because he likes food, but he's so cavalier about it. He's so, you know, he doesn't have a real sort of understanding of food, but he loves it. And it's funny because, he just becomes his character, though. He becomes, you know, Michael Midgley, the chef, who just doesn't seem to care about a thing.
I recommend next year you guys have the right to go to the videotape, like the NFL, and do a replay and see who's cheating.
Tom, I want to see the reality series of you and him in a boxing match. I think that'd be cool.
That'd be fun.
Tom Colicchio, thanks for being on the Restaurant
so much.
Guys.
You're welcome, guys.
Watch Top Chef on Bravo. You can find out about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.